This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese, where cheesemakers have been making award-winning cheese for generations. Go to wisconsincheese.com to order directly from Wisconsin dairies to your home.
This week on Meat and Three, we're revisiting Kitchen Joys to bring a bit of levity to life during lockdown.
The major lesson is that I'm learning to just enjoy anything that I can taste and to taste it slowly and to just enjoy it.
Reach for those jars of jam, you know, maybe bourbon, that apricot jam, and maybe some lemon juice. Shake it vigorously and strain it into a cocktail glass. It'll be delightful.
It's like, no, what are you cooking? What do you like to cook? And naturally, that's going to be a little bit like a niche because you are not going to be an expert at everything. Your shtick could be that you are not an expert at everything, but you want to learn.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, hello. Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it is Wednesday, June 3rd, 2020. This is the 253rd episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a highly regarded chef and restaurant partner in New York City, and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, including COVID-19, my solo dining takeout experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to strive for excellence. Let's aim to be our ultimate selves in everything we do, from our work to our lifestyle, our relationships, community, and health. Let's always put our best foot forward and lead by example. Let's never settle, but instead look at where we are at and how we can improve and be better. Let's understand that every effort counts and every action will be recognized. It's a pursuit of excellence. That's my tip today. Now, I'm really happy to have my guest here with me on the show. It is James Kent. He is the executive chef of Crown Shy and the owner partner of J2K Creative. James started his culinary career as a summer apprentice at Boulay when he was 15, and has since spent time in the kitchens of Babeau, John George, and Gordon Ramsay, as well as 11 Madison Park, which received 4 stars from the New York Times, 3 Michelin stars, and a spot on the world's 50 best restaurants while he was the chef de cuisine. And when James was promoted to executive chef at the Nomad, it received a Michelin star. In 2010, he placed first in the Bocuse d'Or USA competition and 10th in the world, representing the U.S. at Bocuse d'Or in Lyon, France. And in 2017, James pursued his first solo project with his business partner, Jeff Katz, at 70 Pine Street in New York's financial district, including Crown Shy, which has also received 1 Michelin star. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jerry. It's really good to be here. I'm excited to chat and kind of talk you through all the struggles of the restaurant business and from my point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for joining me, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about your past and about what you're going through now. So I always like to start the show just to find out about my guest's background. I know you grew up in New York. I'm wondering how, when you got that spark to go to the kitchen at Boulay.
So I, you know, as a little kid, I was a little chubby kid and I loved food. I was always hungry. And I learned early on that food brought people together. With all the meals that we had with my family and special holidays. And as a young kid, my uncle's best friend owned a restaurant in Hell's Kitchen. And he made me work. I was 12 years old. I was in seventh grade, and I was this Sunday busboy, and I would cover brunch. And for me, it was a job. I made 50, 60 bucks a service, and I had money to like do whatever, take a girl to the movies or, you know, buy video games or, you know, what have you. And then, you know, I would sneak into the kitchen. And I learned how to roll pasta there. And so I was the first person. I would open the restaurant and I'd go in the kitchen and I'd like sneak food for myself because I was this little hungry, chubby kid. And you know, so that was like my first connection to a restaurant. And I worked at that restaurant throughout my high school, junior high school and high school until I went to school. So that's what I started, like my first kind of like taste of a restaurant. It was a neighborhood Italian restaurant. And David Boulay moved into my building in the early 90s, late 80s, something like that. And you know, Boulay was a badass and his restaurant was incredible. And we, I think I had one of my birthdays there for lunch when I was maybe 13 or 14. And then we went to like a big family dinner and it was really, you know, the first real fine dining meal of my life. You know, I tasted foie gras and did all, you know, like you walk into this room of apples and, you know, the way that he transported you, was really special. And so my mom forced me to knock on his door to work at Boulay. And I was this terrified kid. And it's funny. I forgot about it. And I saw him at a James Beard Awards when I was doing the Bocuse d'Or, and I had a table in the gala before the meal. And I hadn't talked to Boulay since I was a kid. And I saw him, I'm like, James Kent, I was your neighbor. And I was talking to his wife and I was telling her the story. And I was like, yeah, my mom made me knock on his door. And David was like, he's like, no, you wrote notes. Cause I was like too terrified. I was this little kid and David Boulay was this rock star. And I like would put notes under his door. Like, please let me work. Please let me work. Please let me work. And then he brought me in for this summer experience. And I spent a summer working at Boulay my freshman year of high school. And it was just a weekend, just on the weekends. So it was just 2 days a week. But still, you know, it was this really special experience.
You had that restaurant bug, I guess, that you from an early age you saw that it would be your long-term career, or at that time it was, you know, still like, just a job,
you know. Yeah, at that point I you know, like I was 15, like I had no idea what I really wanted. You know, I know that, you know, I never did well in school, and it's not that I wasn't bright. You know, I was tested really well and you know, and I was in like these kind of bright classes, but I just never really had any drive or any real support. There was no like structure in my life. You know, my parents had their issues and, you know, I, you know, kind of was left to my own devices to kind of, to, you know, work through things. So I would never go to school. And when I did, I would be high or I would cause trouble. And I was one of these like, you know, knuckleheads. But then when it came to work, you know, it's interesting that, my first job, my uncle's best friend's restaurant, I could never miss a day at work because my uncle was like the muscle in the family. If I was in trouble, like my uncle would give me grief for it. So like it was not an option to miss a day at work or call in sick or be late. So I didn't miss a day at work until I was like 30. And it was because of that, like, you know, early kind of work ethic that is one of like the reasons that I'm here. But it was a job and slowly it turned into something that I really, really liked and then loved. So I went to Johnson & Wales University in Providence, and it was the only school that I got into. I didn't get into any other school. I didn't even know that it was a hospitality school. I didn't know that it was a culinary school. And I just went there for marketing because there's a business campus. And it was really like such, you know, I was super lucky to go on to that school. Because a year or two in, I was like, hey, I'd worked in restaurants my whole life. And I worked at Boulay, which was this amazing restaurant. And I'm in this restaurant management culinary school for this thing that I don't care about at all. And so it was like something was telling me that this is what I needed to do.
And then, I mean, your restaurant experience you've gotten over the years, the restaurants I named from, you know, Babod to 11 Madison to Nomad, I mean, impressive resume you have. I mean, what were your biggest takeaways from these experiences?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, we are the sum of our experiences. You know, we culminate, like, all the things that we've learned and we've done make us the person that we are. You know, so, like, I learned in every restaurant, in every kitchen that I've ever been in. And, you know, it's something, and literally I take things from every restaurant, and whether it's a skill or whether it's an ingredient or whether it's, you know, what not to do, or, you know, and it's this like sum of all these things. And, you know, I'd like, you know, like a lot of these experiences or opportunities have been luck. You know, I luckily, you know, it's funny. So my mom told me she knew someone at Babo, and Babo in 2001, when I was working there, was like the hardest restaurant to get into in the kitchen or the dining room. You know, there was a line at 5 o'clock and it was always booked. And my mother said, "Hey, I know a manager at Babo. I'm going to send your resume there." I'm like, "Sweet." And I just come back from school. I was like, it was kind of chilling through the summer and trying to figure out when to get started. So I show up on day one. Mario hires me, and he's like, "James Kent's a solid name. You're hired." Literally is what he told me. And then, and it turned out that my mother didn't know anyone at the restaurant, and it was the wrong restaurant. So she, like, I forget what the restaurant was, but she was like mistaken. So she basically just sent my resume, said she knew the manager, and then I showed up and like got the job. Whereas, you know, they hired someone every few months because it was such a small team. There were 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Folks.
Go mom.
You know, and I started like 2 days later. It was just perfect time. They're like, "Right, you start in 2 days." You know, it's just this like serendipitous kind of, you know, moment.
From my last show on episode 252, I had on Kevin Baim, who first of all says he loves you. And
he's a good guy. It's my boy.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And he's the co-founder of Boca Restaurant Group in Chicago and the founding member of Independent Restaurant Coalition. So to get more specific into this, he wants to know, because you worked with Will Gradera at the Nomad and EMP and with Lee Wolin, yeah, and he's close with both of them. So he wants to know, what did you learn from Will and Lee that you still carry with you today with your own restaurants? And I knew you worked with Will, but I didn't know you worked with Lee, and I'm not even sure where. So where?
Yeah, Lee was with us at Love Medicine Park. Lee is one of my brothers. You know, that core team at Love Medicine Park, you know, I call it like the OG team. And it's funny, there's a photograph that pops up every year that we always repost that's like Lee, it's Bryce Schumann, it's David Nafel, it's Angela Pinkerton, it's myself. You know, it's a handful of these really great people that helped us build that restaurant. And I think, you know, I've learned a lot from Lee. He's a great cook. He's a really incredible person. He also challenged me to be a better leader and to be able to, like, treat people properly. And whereas, there are, early on in your career, it takes a lot to manage people, and I haven't found a real system that teaches you how to manage people other than doing it and making mistakes and learning that there's better ways to work through things. And I'm pretty sure like Apple may have a really great management program that they have all their managers, but in the restaurant business, it's very tough. Like you're a cook, the next day you're a manager. You know, and I know that Danny had a really, really good system, but, you know, it takes, you know, there are classes that they teach, but it takes maybe a year to take all these classes, at least for us, because 11 Madison Park was so crazy, we just didn't have the time. That there were points where he challenged me and was like, you know, I don't appreciate how, you're doing this, and you know, it's helped me work through things, and you know, I learned the word empathy, or I knew it, but I like, you know, I'd like to look at everyone's point of view and kind of figure out how to help them. And Lee, man, Will, I've learned so much from Will. You know, he's an incredible leader. He's someone that people really want to support, and he, you know, both Daniel and Will, like they like squeeze the most out of people, and I don't mean that in like a bad way at all. Like they allow you to find your potential. You know, like they force you. They like challenge you to work as hard or find solutions, or you know, like all, like, you know, that, you know, I was with them for 10 years. I was at 11 Madison Park Number for 10 years. And you know, the amount of growth for me personally, professionally, you know, I walked in there this young kid, and I walked out with like a family, a work family, my personal family, these skills, the, you know, and with the like momentum to be able to do what we're doing now, you know, and you know, Will, I learned to listen. It's funny, we would, you know, have conversations, and he would like reprimand me for something, and instead of like listening to what was happening, I was thinking my response. Think about my response, which is often what happens when you're arguing with someone. You know, instead of opening up and listening, you're like, all right, okay, he said I'm an asshole, and I'm going to say these things to try to hurt him, or these things to push back on the comment that was 5 minutes earlier. You know, it's like, and he called me. He's like, dude, you didn't hear one word I said. And I'm like, that is fair. I'm just trying to figure out my point to win the debate. And it's, you know, I don't know. You know, there's, you know, this show, if we had another 2 hours, like, you know, we could talk through the, you know, the things that.
I would love to get all the details and find out, you know, yeah, you've again, like, incredible experience, and I'm sure you have a lot of stories and lessons learned. When did you know it was time to go on your own, and how did your partnership come about with Jeff Katz?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, so I was at 11 Madison Park for like 7 years, and I started as the roast and sous chef, and did all the things in the restaurant, and you know, ended up as the chef de cuisine for a couple of years, and then it was my time to move on. I'm like, hey, and I told Daniel and Will, I'm like, you know, I'll run the kitchen for three, whatever it was. There was a time frame, and I'm like, hey, I want to go. I want to open a restaurant. Like, the restaurant industry is really personal. Food is really personal. And although I'm like, a lot of my input is, you know, a lot of my fingerprints or touches are on the restaurant and the food, it's a Daniel Hum and Will Vadera restaurant. And like, the food is Daniel's, it's not mine. So like, you know, I knew that was something that I wanted to do. And, you know, I was trying to leave. I almost didn't go to the Nomad. You know, I went to Daniel, and like, I ran the kitchen for X amount of time. You know, I want to do this. And they were supportive, and he introduced me to a lot of different people. And then the Abram left the Nomad, and Daniel was, and Will were like, hey, like, we want to offer you this job as, you know, as exec chef of the Nomad. And initially I fought it, because I'm like, hey, I want to do my own thing. And then I was looking at similar jobs for other owners. You know, I would be executive chef of someone's restaurant, and I'm like, hey, let me just sit down with these guys and see what they're offering. And, you know, I love them. They're my friends. They're my family. They, you know, we grew together, and, you know, they won me over, and I ran the Nomad. And for me, like, those 3 years at the Nomad were really influential, because 11 Madison Park was kind of this like fantasy land. It was this fine dining restaurant. You know, like, the business didn't necessarily matter. It needed to work, but it, you know, it was Daniel, Will, they were the owners. And when we sat at a P&L meeting, I was with them, and we would debate over the business. Whereas like the Nomad, it's owned by these like businessmen that want to run a profitable business. And so it basically forced me to go from this like fine dining world of like everything comes easy and we can just like do whatever we want to like, okay, how do we run this business? How do we find ways to get creative? How do we find ways to make sure that the quality is great, but food cost is good, or late, you know, like all these things. Whereas Le Mans Park, that wasn't the debate. The debate was how great can it be? And also at the Nomad, I kind of stepped a little further out from Daniel because as a chef who was seen at E&P, he dictated 90% of it and then we figured it out. Whereas like at the Nomad, I dictated and ran things by Daniel, but it was probably 90% me, or whatever it was. It was more of me in the restaurant, and I was able to kind of cook a bit more. I did some really cool events. I did a dinner at Pujol. I did a dinner in Singapore. I did all these 50 best dinners that Daniel couldn't do, and I went and represented myself, and that helped me meet people and kind of get my name out there. And then it's so funny. I was, when the Nomad was growing, I was going to run all the restaurants, and I was going to open. I was working on the development of Los Angeles and Vegas and London to some degree. And then, and I was sitting with Daniel to kind of like propose how I managed my life, how much time I spend in each place, what you need from me, what I can contribute. And I'd been thinking about, I'd been writing business plans. I put a deck together previously, but I was like still like 80% focused on Nomad, 90%. And Daniel knows me really well. And he, at the beginning of the meeting, he was like, do you really want to do this? And I'm like, wow. And he's like, because I know you and I love you. And if you don't want to, I want to support you. And Daniel is someone who's, my mentor and a dear friend. And like at that moment, I kind of say it was a nudge. Like think of like an animal nudging their baby to take its first step. Like a baby giraffe that's like nudging the animal to stand up and walk, it was like this nudge. And because he could have convinced me, at that meeting, he could have convinced me to stay for another 10 years, and thankfully, how things kind of turned out over the past couple of years, it was a really great decision. But so Daniel Will gave me a year to figure out what my life would look like. And paid me and kept me on and I ran the kitchen and I spent 5-6 months figuring out, meeting with people, looking at projects, finding investors, and so it really, really worked out well.
Yeah, and you found this amazing space down in the financial district, and Crown Shy was born.
Yeah, and. And we came across this beautiful building, and it's interesting. I brought Will to one of our meetings, or I had my business partner now meet our like financial partner Jeff and mine, our partner, to a meeting with Will. Will sat in on these and like poked holes at everything and helped me . I left these people that I loved. These guys are my family and friends and partners. And it's difficult to invest in people that you don't know. And I think Will has a really good read of people, and basically sat down and after the meeting, for me, it wasn't like, because I knew they had capital. I knew they were smart. I knew they, I was like, are they good people? How do you feel about them? Do you think this is someone that I'll be able to like build a business with? And we've been incredibly lucky, and our partners are amazing and incredibly supportive. And especially through this whole process, through COVID-19, like they've really like stepped up to the plate and allowed us to support our team.
I've been to Crown Shy a couple times and a big fan. Yeah. And I know you were also planning to do, I believe it's called Saga high. Like 60 something floor. So what's I mean, what are you going through? How's it been? I mean, Crown Shy opened about a year ago.
It's been incredibly tough. You know, like it's crazy that within one week, everything stopped. You know, like it went from this intangible thing from far away that wasn't affecting us to like something that is very, very real and dangerous. And you know, it was tough. You know, thankfully we have partners that allowed us to do the right thing. You know, we set up a severance package and we've paid insurance through the end of June. We've been able to keep everyone that had insurance through the restaurant insured, and had a severance package for our management team. And we were able to send gift cards to all of our hourly employees. We paid them some vacation time initially, and then sent them gift cards, I think twice or something, just to make sure that they had a little extra cash in their pocket. And you know, it's tough. It was literally a year to the day, almost a day or two. March 18th, we closed on the 15th. So basically, we opened on March 18th last year, and we closed on the 15th. And we were going to open Saga, like a month from the day we closed. You know, there was an article in Vanity Fair that was incredible. It was a little sketch of the top of the building that kind of showed all the different places. The restaurant downstairs, and we on this floor is a bar, and on this floor is a special room, and here's the dining room. And you know, it came out a few weeks into the isolation, and it was the first time that it felt real. Like it like hit me. You know, I didn't really like we were. I don't know. It was real. It was like all the things that we've been working towards just stopped. And this article that David Gruber, our like, you know, our publicist, like worked really hard to get and we thought was really amazing, like, you know, kind of was, I don't know if the word wasted is the right term or not. You know, I think for me, I don't want to feel pity on myself because we are in a really good place. And as far as a restaurant at the moment, we were able to keep five or six people employed, and initially we fed tenants in the building. We did like a family meal, which is like simple food. It was $10 a plate. You know, we weren't making money on it. It was just to make sure that people in the building kind of had food and felt safe. And it kept five people employed, and they stayed in the hotel in the building. And then we started working with Rethink to cook food for the food insecure and first responders. And we just came back in the kitchen this past Monday to do more with Rethink. And we're feeding three churches. And I was trying to find exactly where they are, but I think they're in Harlem. I don't know exactly. I should have been prepared for this. But we're feeding 3,000 meals. We're cooking 3,000 meals a week. And we're slowly putting together thoughts of to go. And we were gonna start to go sooner, but now with the climate and how crazy things are, we feel like we can help the community in a better way with our presence than cooking food. So we're actively thinking through how to support the cause and the protesters and what's the right thing for us.
Right. Well, that's wonderful. You've been doing that. And I saw Crown Shy is now on Talk.
So this has taken the past month to get this organized, and we set up with Talk to sell food and to sell experiences and to do like a brunch thing with a Bloody Mary bottle and Renata, our pastry chef, doing like a box of cookies and sweets and our bread, you know. So we were pushing towards opening for to go, I think today, but we've decided to pause it. I feel like there's more important things that need to be done.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's good you're recognizing that, and you know, you have to do you know what feels right, and that's great. You've been doing those efforts. What tough question to answer, but what are you thinking now with Saga opening, or is it too soon to say?
No, we're opening. We're definitely opening all these restaurants. You know, like, I think we have people that we want to bring back to work. We need to bring back to work. And we have a restaurant in Crown Shy that I think is the kind of food that people want to eat right now. And it's a space that we can make feel really, really comfortable with kind of these limited seatings. So we're going to figure out when we're going to do this, but we're definitely coming back to life. Thankfully, you know, I know there are lots of people that are not, you know, we are. And I think Saga, you know, we were always, our goal with Saga was always, what is the future of fine dining restaurant in New York City? And that doesn't change now. It's just the climate is a bit different, you know? So we were always trying to think forward, think about the future, look back, but then evolve. You know, like if we opened a restaurant that felt much like 11 Madison Park or like per se, I think we had failed in our goal of kind of understanding what the next 10 years of this type of dining feels like in New York City. So that goal still works now, but it's just, you know, the climate is a bit different. So, you know, I feel like there's always a time and a place for a restaurant like this. And we don't really know what it means to like what the evolution of a restaurant like this really looks like. You know, I think a more relaxed restaurant is something that is important to me. You know, I remember going to, you know, like, you know, one of my first fine dining restaurants as a grown up, as an adult, and I felt out of place, and I sat up straight, and I felt like I wasn't comfortable. And I had a great meal, and the food was delicious, and the service was good. But I want people to come to our restaurant and feel comfortable, and feel loved, and feel welcomed, and have an experience that is evolved. And what that means, I don't 100% know.
Well, I can't wait to come back to Crown Shy to Saga. That view, I've seen enough photos from the rooftop to
know it's amazing.
To be sold on it. Yeah, we'll have to see, but I'm excited. You know, I look forward to you coming back and me visiting and being, you know, for the experience. So.
We're definitely really excited. So I didn't talk about Jeff and how we met, and, you know, we like, and it was like a blind date. You know, we like, you know, I signed on to the project because it was amazing. And I'm like, okay, I can't pass this. This is something that's crazy. And they, like, opportunities like this don't come along often, even though I was just me. It was no team, no partner, no, you know, it was just, I was literally just a one man restaurant. And I reached out to people that I really trust, Will being one of them. And I reached out to Anthony Rudolph, which we all know and love, and, you know, kind of asked for advice. And I'd never met Jeff before, even though we, you know, we play in the same pool and we, you know, worked in the same industry for a very long time.
But he was cross town. He was on the west side, you know.
I know, he was right across the street. And Will was like, out of the people that do what I do, he is the top one or two out of us. And I had a meeting with Jeff, and Jeff, you know, like I heard about him. He rocks sneakers. He has cool suits, and he had run Del Posto for 10, 11 years. Like we're basically on a similar path.
Right.
You know, we worked in the industry for a long time and made it to the top of these restaurants that we worked for. And then, you know, and you know, Jeff is the kind of guy to take a risk on someone that he, you know, we had one cup of coffee, and he brought his wife down and kids, and we introduced families, and then Jeff was like, yeah, I'm down, you know, and for someone to take a risk, I know that, like, he probably did the same to me, like, how is James? Who is he? What is he? I know that he worked for Daniel for this many years, but is he an asshole? Is he a terrible person? Do I want to work with him? You know, like, you have to vet your partner. And you know, I think, like, you know, like, I'm amazed and impressed that Jeff would, like, took this chance. And
well, it worked. I don't, you know.
I know when we got our Michelin star that night, we had this huge party, and at the end of the night, I gave him a hug, and I'm like, you know what? Like, we all knew that this was possible. Like, we didn't know each other. We just know that we come from these restaurants that were really good. But, like, we knew that this was capable, that we were capable of doing this, but it worked.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Like,
you know, we built this amazing restaurant.
So, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to come back, and we will play my speed round game. We'll do a quick industry news. I have my solo dining takeout experience and the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Despite challenging circumstances, dairy farmers are working hard to make sure communities across the country have fresh, nutritious food to keep us healthy during these uncertain times. It's more important than ever to eat, enjoy, and support real dairy. Want to help? Go to wisconsincheese.com, where you can order award-winning Wisconsin cheese directly from cheesemakers to keep our family dairy farms in business for generations to come.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. My guest today is James Kent, the executive chef of Crown Chai, and we're talking about his partnership with Jeff Katz. James, it is time now for my speed round game. So what this is I'm going to name a couple things, and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Cool.
Okay, you ready?
Chocolate, obviously.
Chocolate, good, cool, me too. Okay, eat in or eat out?
At the moment, please eat out. we've been eating in a lot.
yeah, I'm with you.
But eating in for us is still pretty good, though, so.
Well, of course, I mean, if you're cooking. How about wine, beer, cocktail, mocktail, or champagne?
I think cocktail.
Okay. Tasting
at
menu.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Sorry. No, at least the cocktails at Crown. Yes.
Crown cocktails. How about tasting menu or a la carte?
I think probably a la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
There's a time and a place for both.
True. Communal table or chef's counter?
Oh, I think communal table.
How about tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Oh, you're gonna stick me with this one. I think
I stick this one with everyone.
I think this is a huge conversation. I think that there needs to be a way to compensate the kitchen on the same lines as the dining room. I think it's something that we're like, you know, it's so tough because the restaurant in theory can be a really great profession for lots of people, and you know, these guys and girls and professionals in the dining room make a ton of money, and the cooks in the back do not, you know, and it's there needs to be a way that for us to solve it, because it's just not fair. And like, you know, I used to say, like, oh, I got paid $10 an hour, so, you know, forget them, they need to struggle and work. And like, and I was having this debate with Jeff today, and he's like, still sucks. It's still like, you know, like, even if we're paying people way more than I got paid, but even then, it's like still tough, and we need to find a way. And I think,
we do.
You know, and Jeff has been really active with lobbying the government for COVID-19, and and working with War and Big and all these different not-for-profits. And I think this is like the next, this is the next thing that we're
going to work on. Yeah, it needs to be done.
Our kitchen team, yeah. And you know, I don't have the answer, you know, it's like,
right. Well, this is, it's a loaded either or question.
Yeah,
it's a long conversation.
Yeah, of course.
My next few are, I have a few more, a little lighter. I got running, biking, or cross training.
Oh, I'm a runner, so running, but I'm trying to buy a bike because I'm getting old and my knees.
Have a graffiti art or neon art.
Oh, you know me well.
I do my research.
You ask, I do graffiti.
I saw some of your graffiti work. It's amazing.
I know. Yeah, thank you, man. I love it. It's, you know, as a young kid in New York, before social media, this is how we called it fame. Like, to be famous in the graffiti world means that you had tags on every train car or every block. And now, you know, it's like, it's how the people knew you. And it's how you know, and it's this expression. And it's interesting. It translates to me in the kitchen. So like the way that I thought about graffiti as a young man, and now I've brought it back over the past like 5-6 years. I was teaching myself to put food on a plate by painting on a wall or drawing in a black book, and using negative space and layering and things like that. It, you know, like it's interesting how
yeah,
it translates to the food that we put on a plate, the different colors and textures. And
yeah. Well, and my last two, I have cheese plate or dessert.
Oh, dessert.
And Manhattan or Brooklyn.
Oh, Manhattan. Always. I'm born and raised in Manhattan. So that's a
given.
That's also a loaded question. Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's the game. Quick, you know, we're a little short on time. So just for industry news, I was just going to share an update with COVID-19. A good update for restaurants is there was an article on Eater about how House votes to change Paycheck Protection Program after urging from restaurants. And this is talking about, you know, how the PPP, the House of Representatives voted to make some changes, one of them being the rule from 8 weeks to 24 weeks to use the funds, having just 60% of the loan can be used for payroll. I know you, I guess you and Jeff have been involved with Roar. I don't know if you.
Yeah, we've been, you know, Jeff has been fighting for this. We all have, I know. You know, we all saw Will Cadera and Thomas Keller.
Yeah,
at the White House, you know, as much as I was cringing when I was watching the conversation happen, you know, it's something that like we need desperately, and we got the PPP and we haven't touched it because we can't spend it because we can't bring people back to work. So it's, you know, like it's super important, and if this new law gets passed by the Senate and Donald Trump signs it, this will mean that there's an opportunity for restaurants like ours to come back to life.
There's lots more
that needs to be done. There's a ton more that needs to be done.
Watching.
We saw that in it.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go on.
I was just saying, I was watching the White House, and I was just so nervous watching. I couldn't imagine what it would be like to be in that room.
I know, and Will, the best Will cut the president off. I love it. I was so proud of him. I'm like, let's go, Will Cadera, cutting the president off. I'm like, yeah, get back into that conversation. Don't let him change the topic.
No,
And then Thomas is meant for that stuff. Telling stories. He's like, you know, he's the
butter.
You know, he's yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad to see that change, you know, that all the collaboration that's happened between chefs and that everyone has really been working together to make change and help restaurants so you guys can survive.
Yeah, and you know, for us it's a family, and this is like we love what we do. We throw parties every night. We like allow people to forget about all the crazy shit out there. And we like, and we have a home for people. And we, you know, we give people, you know, this is, the restaurant industry gave me everything. You know, I like started as a busboy at the, you know, this restaurant called Pietra Santa in Hell's Kitchen. I'm 41, so I was 30 years ago. And 30 years later, you know, I had the ability to learn a lot. I have a skill. I have a skill that like no one can ever take from me. I can like go cook anywhere. If this is something that's just innate. And now we have the ability to like lead people. And, you know, that's what I like. That's what I love doing. Like, I'm not the most creative. I'm not the best at what I'm doing or you know, whatever it is. What I'm good at is I'm good at leading people and teaching people and trying to find the best and, you know, and pull the best from my team and allow people to succeed and give people opportunities to grow, you know, and allow people to make money and to grow and to, you know, like.
Yeah. You know, and that's amazing.
In their life.
You've done really well. And I think, you know, and you're very well respected and, you know, admired in the industry. Everyone loves you. So you've done good.
As my grandma would say, we fooled them again.
Well,
we fooled them all.
As we ponder that, I have my solo dining takeout experience, which I'm going to share and just run that through. So this week I am sharing an experience I had from Tame. So here's the rundown. The location, 2222 Waverly Street, West Village, New York City. The concept, Israeli spot for falafel and vegetarian eats. The chef and owner, Anat Admani, and her husband, Stefan Naf-Ziger. Why did I take out? Well, I was craving a hearty veggie sandwich, and this seemed like a good idea. So my experience. So last Friday it was, I was once again biking around the city and I decided to order online through their website and then bike over there and pick up my meal. And it was about 20 minutes after I ordered that I stopped by. It was ready as soon as I got there and I took my goodies home. So what did I get? I got two sandwiches because while I was at it, I was figured I'm not just going to get one. So I got their falafel pita with green and harissa falafel combo. It had hummus, Israeli salad, pickled cabbage, and tahini. And I got that in a white pita. And then to mix it up in a whole wheat pita, I got the ceviche, which is their fried eggplant, boiled egg hummus, and I also had all the fixins. And I had a fresh ginger mint lemonade to go. My take, it was just fabulous. These sandwiches are super hearty. They're big, very flavorful, very spicy. I kind of ate about a third of each and saved the rest for leftovers the next day. The ambiance, so it's a cute pickup takeout spot in the West Village and the ambiance of my own home. I'd say it's perfect for anyone looking for a quick, simple meal of sandwiches. Interesting tidbit, the word tame means tasty in Hebrew, and it's spelled T-A-I-M. This location in the West Village opened in 2005. They now have 5 locations in New York City, including 2 in food halls, but those are temporarily closed due to COVID. And they also have 1 in D.C. Personal fun fact, I'm friendly with Anat. I've been a fan of her Middle Eastern restaurant concepts for a while. She has Balabusta that was in Nolita and then moved over to the West Village. And fortunately, she had Kishkash too, which was a couscous spot that closed. We'll see what she has coming up next under her sleeve. So the cost of my meal was $21. That's not including tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Yes, I would. And their website's tamefalafel.com. And that's the last time I was downtown on Friday. city has been quite scary this week, you know, with everything happening.
It's been tough. We're trying to figure out the best way forward. But the goal is to help support in any way possible. for us.
Yeah, and yeah, your initiatives, everything you're doing is so wonderful. And especially since it's such a hard time. I mean, what you're going through, I mean, it's, I just give you a lot of credit for stepping up and doing what you're doing.
Yeah, there's people out there. We have the ability to like come to work and do good things, and we just need to support those that cannot and that don't have a voice. And, you know, with whatever voice we have, we are going to support. And I can't really go deep into it because we're working through it right now as a collective, and how to kind of do it the best way we can and what we have the ability to do. But understand that we support, you know, the peaceful protests and are going to do whatever we can, whether that means cooking or using our social media presence or us raising capital or money and donating, whatever it is, you know, so we're.
Yeah, no, it's good. So before we wrap up, let me ask you for the final question. So my next guest is John Weissman. He is the founder of Curious Elixirs, which is a non-alcoholic craft drinks company. James, mm-hmm. Can you ask a question for John?
So I've been really thinking about the food insecure through this time. You know, obviously seeing all the food lines and, you know, pantries and all the suffering and struggling. And I know that he is an advisor on the Council for Food Bank of New York City. And just understand just the question on how do we move forward? What's the dynamic of feeding people, and how do we, you know, kind of bring to light all the struggles that have been so focused on in the past few months with COVID and all the challenges. Like, how do we keep that rolling, and how do we raise support and raise money and feed people?
Great. Thank you. I will ask him. Good question. And that's the show. I wish we had more time. Awesome. I wish we had like 5 hours so I could get all of the details.
I know. I'd love to come back, and I'd love to chat some more. And I know that we are doing this on computers from far, far away, but I'd love to at some point come out to Brooklyn and sit in front of you and have a cup of coffee or tea, whatever you drink in the studio.
Or pizza. Yeah, I would love that too. I know we originally planned to do that in person, and this is the new normal for now. So we'll see. But
new normal.
I would love that too. And just congratulations on your whole career.
You.
And I wish you much success in getting through this hard time.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you for having me, inviting me to come chat with you guys. And I wish you the best, and stay safe, and. I'll see you in a few months when we open our doors.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
My guest today has been James Kent. He is the executive chef of Crown Shy and the owner and partner of J2 Creative with Jeff Katz. Their website is crownshy.nyc, and you can follow him on social media at Chef James Kent and at Crown Shy NYC. You can follow me at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR. At All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. Websites BayerPublicRelations.com, SherryBayer.com, and AllintheIndustry.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks to my engineer today, Amanda Wang, and thanks again to James, and also to his team, David Gruber, Natalie Black, and to my good friend, Erica Feiler. I'm Sherry Bayer. Be safe, be well, and thank you all for being part of All in the Industry. Bye. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.